Welcome to Yarns at Yinhu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 330, Corn, Cormo, and Corriedale, recorded on Sunday, July 28th, 2024. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me as Sarah Pomegranate on social media. Each time I record an episode, I post show notes, photographs, and links to things I talk about on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. Support for this podcast is provided by generous contributions to Ko-fi, and I am so thankful for all of the folks who have supported me with their Ko-fi memberships and one-time contributions, as well as purchases of my patterns over on Ko-fi. That is a way to purchase PDF versions of patterns I've written over the years if you don't want to use Ravelry as your download resource. Each quarter, to show a token of my appreciation, I offer up prizes, and quarter two prizes were announced in the last episode. Nancy has claimed hers, but JK, that's J-A-Y-K-A-Y, you are a winner. So please get in touch with me so I can get your prizes, because there are two skeins of yarn that are destined to come your way. Please get in touch with me so I can get those into the mail for you. And in this episode, I'm telling you about quarter three prizes. Again, there are two. Sarah Ellis of Woolen Waves, Handmade Socks and More is going to create another pair of custom-made socks for one lucky winner. And I am offering up a prize from my own stash that includes a sport weight, eco-botanically dyed sock blank from Ninja Chickens. This has been in my stash in some really gorgeous reds, but I have not knitted up, and I just think it's criminal that I'm not using it, so I'm going to pass it along to someone as a prize. So the prize is one sock blank and two books that are from my bookshelf. They're duplicates. I have a signed copy of Knit for Health and Wellness by Betsen Corkill. And I also have a brand new copy of The Spinner's Book of Fleece by Beth Smith. These are great resources for any knitter's library. And so all three of those items will become prize two. All you need to do to be in the running for these prizes is to become a contributing member on Ko-fi or to make a one-time contribution before my prize drawing date of September 21st. I will be announcing the quarter three winners in the podcast episode following September 21st. And thank you so much for your contributions. I've been doing quite a bit of knitting since we spoke last. I have completed the beautiful lace weight cowl that I've been working on. It's called Cole Revive, and it's a free pattern that's available on Ravelry, and I highly recommend this pattern. I used a skein of very precious Kiviet that was given to me as a birthday gift. It's in a beautiful plum color. I cast on, as I explained in my last episode, I cast on while I was traveling to visit with friends in Maine. And I've been knitting on this as kind of like an on-the-go and purse project. It is lace. There are two very simple lace rows. I think it's an 11-stitch repeat. And each lace row is followed by a rest row, which consists of only knits and purls. It's very easy to read this lace, so for that reason, I think it's a great entry-level lace knitting project because you have the opportunity to learn how to complete the lace stitches and then in the row following to read your lace and make sure all of the yarn overs and knit two togethers are in the correct spot. And then you execute another lace knitting row. It takes very little yarn, which makes this an ideal travel project. So my Kvyat skein, I think, was under 200 yards. So it's tiny and light and a great way to work with yarn in hot weather because it's not a heavy or a thick project. It's very light in your hands. And it creates a beautiful gift. What I like about this cowl in terms of the wearability is that you can stretch it out quite a bit to get it over your head very easily, but then you can also pull on each end and get it to be long and really sort of scrunch very cozily around your neck. So I think any recipient would be extremely pleased to receive something like this. Of course, you don't need to have a skein of Kvyat to knit it. It would be great for some really precious fingering weight yarn, something that you've been saving, but it's not really enough to do much with. This would be perfect for 150 to 200 yards of a fingering, light fingering, or lace weight yarn. It's a beautiful project. I'm so pleased to have it finished, and I will certainly keep this lace pattern in mind for future on-the-go knitting. I've also been knitting very productively on my Ribwave pullover by Joanna Ang. Last time we spoke, I was working on the back and forth knitting and the shoulder shaping and establishing the cables. And now I am nearly complete with the body of the sweater. I'm just working on the 1x1 rib at the bottom hem. So that was kind of my unspoken goal for myself, was to knit the body of the sweater during the month of July and work on the sleeves in August. They are a little bit tricky because the sleeves also have some quite sophisticated cable detailing on them. However, they're not super long because this is a drop shoulder sweater and the sleeves are starting out near my bicep. So there's not quite as much knitting as a traditional sleeve. It's coming along beautifully. I'm knitting this on US 6 needles, as is recommended, with the beautiful handspun Lenore yarn in a very deep brown. I do think the cables would pop and come forward more with a lighter color yarn, but I am really loving the way this is coming out. The drape of the knitted yarn is much to my satisfaction, and I think this is going to be a beautiful and wearable sweater. It's going to be a Rhinebeck sweater, and I'm working on a skirt to go with this sweater. I was over at my friend Dee's house, and we were going through a whole bunch of her vintage and thrifted sewing patterns. Dee is an A+ thrifter. I mean, seriously, she's good. So she has this big collection of patterns, and we came upon one that's for a very simple wrap skirt. It's an asymmetrical wrap. So one side kind of like slants down and the other folds over it. It has a single pocket on the outside, and then it has a partially elasticized waistband. It has mitered, kind of boxed and mitered corners for the overlapping portions in the front of the skirt. And I would like to make this skirt from a very large, thin piece of wool that I have from my mother's stash. The weight and the drape of this wool is gorgeous. I think it will be relatively easy to sew as far as wool goes. It's kind of like a very thick flannel. I think it's very wearable. The colors are not super exciting. It's kind of like greens and browns and rust colors, which are a bit drab. However, I think that they could be treated really like a neutral, and what I'm hoping is that this skirt will not be just a good pair for the rib wave pullover that I'm knitting, but also for my considerable collection of Marie Wallen knits. I've noticed when looking over the Marie Wallen knitting books, because like who doesn't drool over them, and beautiful Georgia modeling all of the sweaters, that there are some wool skirts that are worn again and again, and they pair well with sweaters of all different types of designs and motifs and color values. So my aim with a neutral kind of wool skirt like this is that it would pair well with some of the other things that I've made. I'm not certain that that's going to happen or how this skirt is going to come out, but I'm going to give it a try because this is a very beautiful, very large piece of wool that's perfect for a garment like this one. I am not completely decided whether I will hand stitch this skirt or whether I will sew it on a machine. And I've also given some thought to whether or not I should line the wool with some lightweight lining fabric or whether I should just wear the skirt with a slip. I don't like any type of drag from a wool skirt worn with tights or something like that. So my belief is that it will either need a slip or a lining, and I haven't quite worked out what to do. The pattern as written does not contain a lining, so I would need to be inventing that on my own. In addition, I'm starting to plan a next project. And I've just been looking and looking and looking and loving the patterns in Lila Raven's collection, Islet. And I have it in mind to knit an Islet drop shoulder sweater and also one of the kerchiefs. And I have procured some very new to me yarn in order to do this. So when I was thinking about making a yarn order, I asked Mary Jean of Bat and Kill Fibers about something interesting in a fingering weight that had been spun at Bat and Kill. And she said, because Mary Jean has her finger on the pulse of everything new and exciting, she said, well, you may want to try this brand new company. And at the time she told me, they weren't even open yet. They were not even taking orders. But within a few weeks of this conversation, I was following them and subscribed to their newsletter and ordered some fingering weight yarn that is 50% American Cormo and 50% American Corriedale. It's called Core, C-O-R, and the company is Upland Fiber Company, U-P-L-A-N-D, Upland Fiber Company. I think this is going to be a very hot new thing, so I recommend that you follow them and you sign up for their newsletter. If you happen to be in the vicinity of Pick Up Every Stitch, they are doing a trunk show there on August 2nd that you might want to check out. My yarn is in the very, very beautiful pewter colorway. And even though it's a dyed yarn, I can see some beautiful heathering. And I just think this is going to be absolutely luscious to knit with. And it's going to be so much fun to contrast this pewter colorway with some of my leftover and brightly colored silk mohair skeins. So the Islet design calls for you to be knitting some very simple eyelet lace with mohair rows kind of insert and inset every so often in the pattern. And so I think this is going to be gorgeous. I'm very excited to wind it and start working on it. And I think that even though it's a lace sweater, it's going to be straightforward and simple enough that this could go pretty quickly. In the meantime, I was also in conversation with Gail of the Cornwall yarn shop about her yarn called Palisades. This is from Hudson Valley Fibers. She also has it milled at Battenkill, and I've knit Gail's yarns many times before. She's always working on an interesting fiber content or an interesting blend, and she is really a champion of locally produced fiber, and I admire her exceedingly for that. Palisades is 100% New York State Corriedale, and this is milled, of course, in New York State, and this is naturally colored yarn. So I have a gorgeous charcoal skein. It's 280 yards to 100 grams, and I think that this can be turned into one of the Islet kerchiefs. I don't think it's super particular what weight of yarn you use, as long as you aren't expecting, you know, a certain outcome in terms of size. And this very deep charcoal yarn will work really beautifully with some silk mohair, maybe different colors, or maybe I'll just stick with one of Carol of Foster Sheep Farm. I have some of her Bert and Ernie that's dyed in a walnut. I over-dyed it with a shocking pink, but I only did about half the skein of that yarn. So I still have some that's quite neutral in color, and maybe that would be a really good pairing. Anyway, I'm excited to have very new New York yarn in my stash. It won't be there long, and it's putting me in the way of getting very excited for Rhinebeck and fall knitting and everything like that. So check out Upland Fiber Company, check out Hudson Valley Fibers and Cornwall Yarn Shop. And as you are planning your fall and winter knits, you may find something very exciting there. Okay, there's fall on the brain with all of the knit patterns and designs that are coming out, but the cooking is all about summer. And recently I have been experiencing a longing for cooking with recipes, or rather, what I want is to get some more consistent and reliable results with my cooking. I have long taken recipes as kind of a suggestion, and that is fun, but I don't get reliable results. And I've just felt recently like I just want to cook some things and know they're going to come out great. So I asked Mary Beth, because she has some beautiful cookbooks that I was browsing the last time I visited her. I asked her about the one that she would give the highest recommendation, and she said, without a doubt, Six Seasons, A New Way with Vegetables by Joshua McFadden. So I ordered it, and I am working to cook from it once a week. I think that will give me a kind of a focus, and it will keep me in tune with the vegetables that are in season. One of the things about a lot of vegetable-forward cookbooks, and I would say this cookbook is vegetable-forward. It's not completely vegetarian, but it puts vegetables front and center. One of the problems with these kinds of cookbooks, in my opinion, is they're often written by California chefs. And the availability of produce in California is very different from what we experience here in the Northeast. And so I end up feeling kind of frustrated or disappointed about the way it's arranged and how to cook from it. Since Joshua McFadden is focused on the Northeast and all of his restaurant experience is really from the Northeast region, his ideas of what constitutes the six seasons is more in keeping with what's actually available to me in my area. And that is exciting. In addition, there is a very heavy focus on really, really tasty sauces. And so I think having some of those in my repertoire and as a backbone for cooking is a great idea. He also has some things like some different kinds of pastry crusts, flatbreads, how to cook grains, and that kind of thing. And I want to work on developing my ability in some of those. So once a week from this cookbook is my goal. I have cooked from this twice, and both nights I was impressed, and Samuel was very impressed. He thought the vegetables were tasty and interesting, and he was working to name the ingredients that were in some of the sauces. So I think it's a win, and I'm really excited about it. In the meantime, I've been kind of going a little bit crazy with cooking corn, and I want to tell you briefly about three ways I prepared corn this weekend. I bought a big bag of corn from a local farm stand, and it was a little bit mealy in terms of cooking it and eating it like corn on the cob. It was a little bit starchy. So I decided to process the rest of it and do some different things with it. Some that I've been wanting to try for a while. The first thing I did with it was to make sweet corn cookies from Taproot Magazine, issue 52, the Savor issue. And I've talked about these before. I made them when that issue came out. It's a really beautiful way to use sweet corn. And if you've frozen sweet corn from the summer, you can even do these in the winter. They're really nice cookies. The combination of putting some cornmeal in the cookie and rolling the balls of dough in a turbinado sugar give it some crunch and texture. That is really up my alley. The one thing about these is that you have to make the dough ahead and refrigerate it for a really long time before you work with it because it's a super sticky dough. So overnight refrigeration is really the best idea for these cookies. So that's sweet corn cookies from Taproot issue 52, the Savor issue. The second thing I did was I made corn butter. This is a recipe featured on Food 52, Genius Recipes. This is a recipe developed by Whitney Wright. She made it at Per Se when she was working there for a time. And corn butter consists of one ingredient, corn. So what you do is you take the raw corn and you cut all the kernels. Then after you've cut the kernels, you flip your knife and you scrape it against the side of the cob to remove all of the additional milk and corn flesh, like as much as you can possibly get out of the corn. Then you whiz that up in a food processor or a blender and then strain it. So you remove all of the solids and you retain all of the juice of the corn. And then you cook it down into a butter-like consistency. It's also the color of butter. I did this and added just a little bit of salt. And I packed it into some Weck jars. And it is absolutely delightful in flavor. You'll just want to put it on anything if you make it. It is a little labor intensive. It does turn your kitchen into a sticky mess of corn juice, but it's worth it. So I'll link the recipe in case you're interested. With the remaining ears of corn, I started but with the same method. I used a sharp knife to remove all of the kernels, and then I spun the cob around and used the back of the knife to strip all of the meat and milk of the corn out. Then I cooked that mixture in just a little bit of water, then whizzed it up in the blender to make Ottolenghi's corn polenta. So once you have the corn and you've made it into a pulp, instead of straining it, you put that whole thing into a skillet and you cook it down until you've removed most of the moisture. Then you add some butter and some feta cheese and you treat it just like you would polenta. The recipe has you put concoction of eggplant that's stewed in like a tomato sauce over top, but I just used some vegetables that I had in the refrigerator and I added some homemade ketchup to that to give it that unctuous deep tomato umami and serve that over the polenta. It was really, really good, and that also got high marks from Samuel. So lots of fun experimenting with corn, and I feel a little bit revived in terms of my approach to cooking with vegetables, that I don't need to figure out what I'm going to do. I just need to look at this beautiful cookbook, choose a recipe, and make it that week and see how it goes. For off the shelf today, I'd like to share a poem by new to me poet Matea Harvey. It's titled In Defense of Our Overgrown Garden. I really like this poem, and it is a challenge to read it aloud because there is no punctuation. It's one dense block of a poem, and Matea Harvey's way of composing a poem involves kind of like overlapping ideas. So we'll see how it goes, but I will also link to this in case you would like to look at it with your eyes instead of just listening. In Defense of Our Overgrown Garden by Matea Harvey. Last night the apple trees shook and gave each lettuce a heart. Six hard red apples broke through the greenhouse glass and landed in the middle of those ever so slightly green leaves that seem no mix of seeds and soil, but of pastels and light and chalk X's mark our oaks that are supposed to be cut down. I've seen the neighbors frown when they look over the fence and see our espalier pear trees bowing out of shape. I did like that they looked like candelabras against the wall. But what's the sense in swooning over pruning? I said as much to Mrs. Jones, and I swear, she threw her cane at me and walked off down the street without. It has always puzzled me that people coo over bonsai trees when you can squint your eyes and shrink anything without much of a struggle ensued with some starlings and the strawberry nets. So after untangling the two, I took the nets off and watched the birds with red beaks fly by all morning at the window. I reread your letter about how the castles you flew over made crenellated shadows on the water in the rain barrel has overflowed and made a small swamp. I think the potatoes might turn out slightly damp. Don't worry if there is no fog on the day you come home. I will build a bonfire, so the smoke will make the cedars look the way you like them. To close, I'm sorry there won't be any salad, and I love you. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful week, and I hope there is some time in that week for the crafting you enjoy. Take care.